This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com. I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And I'm John Williams.
And with us this week, we have a special guest, Lou Schuler.
Dr. John Berardi.
One-on-one with Craig Ballantyne.
One-on-one interview with Bill Hartman.
I'm Eric Cressy.
We can't forget our shakes this week.
It's a hell of a super shake.
Yeah, let's start off with this week's news. Need any updates for the FitCast to get the show notes with all the links for the show, just go to thefitcast.com for all your FitCast needs. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast, FitCast episode number 23. Going solo this week, I'm Kevin Larrabee. There's no John Williams, but I have two very special guests. You might know them from the new Inside Out DVD. You might know them from some of their publications. I'll let them tell you a little bit about that. But without further ado, it's Bill Hartman and Mike Robertson. How you guys doing?
Doing great, Kevin.
Doing well, thanks.
Sounds good. It sounds like Mike's a little... Mike, I need some energy, man.
Sorry, man. I'll get on it.
Well, anyways, we'll start off with Bill. Bill, who are you?
Who am I?
Who are you?
I am Bill Hartman. I'm a physical therapist and a trainer in the Indianapolis area. You can reach me through billhartman.net. But we are here today to mention, at least, Mike and I's new DVD, which is at www.inside-out-warm-up.com. We tried to make it very complicated for everybody to get there. We threw in the hyphens. So it's inside out warm up with hyphens between each word.com. And basically, I've been in the fitness industry for about 17 years and been a therapist for 15 years and worked at multiple levels. I've got professional athletes that I work with, primarily golfers these days. But I work with little kids, and I think my oldest client right now is 81. So it's a pretty broad spectrum of activities that I do. I write for Men's Health magazine, my golf website is www.yourgolffitnesscoach.com.
Very cool.
That should do it for now.
Everyone will most likely know you from episode 3, where at the get-go we got an interview with you, which I have to thank you for helping us get off the ground at the beginning of the FitCast, and now here we are at episode 23, 20 episodes later, and you're back on. Look at that.
I feel so special. Am I the first recurrent character?
Oh, no, Craig Ballantyne is.
Oh, you dog.
Sorry. We had more,
that's okay.
We
I like
had more turbulence training questions, I mean.
I understand. I don't have a cool name like turbulence training.
No, see, that's Inside Out's pretty good, though. I like the cover of the DVD. If you guys haven't seen the cover out there, you got to at least go to the website, check out the cover. I mean, it's probably the best DVD cover I've ever seen, and congrats to you guys for getting, like, that's a great way to get going on the DVD, just right off the bat, having something great to look at. And you guys are in it, right?
Yes, we are. Well,
that, too.
Well, you know, guys wanted pictures of, or they wanted actual t-shirts, the muscle t-shirts from that.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, no, dude, there is no real muscle t-shirt. That's our graphics guy. He kicked ass, so he did a great job with that.
He did. James Dunn at simonjproductions.com. He's excellent.
Is that going to save you 20% now?
It better.
We already paid the bill. We're in good standing already.
There you go.
Well, how about you, Mike? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, name's Mike Robertson. You can find me on the web at robertsontrainingsystems.com. I'm a strength coach and personal trainer here in Indianapolis. I've been doing this for about 8 years now. I started off at Ball State, where I worked with all the Division I athletes there. Spent 3 years in Fort Wayne, and then I've been here for about the last year and a half. You guys might have known some of my work from tnation.com. That's where I've done most of my writing. And slowly getting out there into some of the other forms of media, like speaking engagements and other various print magazines. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm not nearly as exciting as Bill is. So he's got a decade on me in the performance game, so I need to – another 10 years you can come talk to me, and I'll be on his level, hopefully.
That's a nice way of saying that I'm old.
I'm glad you caught that.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's fair. Well, actually, in relation to that, we'll jump into the FitCast news, where episode 5 of the video FitCast just hit the internet. Came out a couple early, couple of days earlier for your newsletter subscribers, and Mike was a part of that where you got a in-depth and very personal interview with Mike Robertson. And what are you laughing about? It was very casual. We're out on the couch at Ryan Lee's boot camp and just doing an interview, kind of chilling out. But that seems to be getting a great response so far. If you want to, you can go to thefitcast.com and you can get a direct link to Google Video for that. I'm not going to be hosting the video for this one because it came in at 40 minutes and it would have cost me a lot of money that I don't have right now. So just go the Google Video route. It looks great. And either way, you'll still get the great interviews with Craig Ballantyne and, of course, Mike and who else? Brian Grasso was on there and
probably Jimmy Ryan Smith. Lee,
yeah,
Jimmy
Ryan.
Smith.
Jimmy Smith, yep. So definitely something you've got to check out. Next up in the FitCast store, we have Alan Cosgrove's products in there now. So if you are going to pick up any of his stuff, go through the fitcast.com and help support the show. That'd be very appreciative. And also, that article that I mentioned like 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago that I did that was going to be on Elite FTS, it's finally up on EliteFTS.com. So if you want to check that out, it's kind of a synopsis of a couple episodes that I did of the FitCast that I originally was going to do for T-Nation. So all the guys in there are T-Nation guys. But I'm actually going to be doing a follow-up where it's going to be covering some more people that have come on the show. So it's something to check out, and it's gotten a great response so far. And I just want to say thank you to all the kind comments that people have sent to me about the article so far. And that's probably going to be the best thing I ever write. So it's going to all downhill from here. So I'm sorry about that.
Congratulations on that, too, Kevin.
Oh, no, thank you. That was I'm just lucky that I basically just had to transcribe a bunch of audio. And people actually thought a lot of it was my writing, but I only wrote really like three paragraphs and everything else was said by people on the show, so I'm just glad I had great guests. And most likely this episode will be in a part two or maybe part three of that set of articles, so we'll look forward to that in the future. But I know you guys want to get to the Q&A, so we'll jump into it right away. There's no FitCast news and no more shakes. Because I know all you hate. Unless you guys have any creative shakes, like it has to have beer in it if we're going to mention it this week.
Beer.
There's always every time I'm on this show, beer comes up.
Oh well, I guess we have a lot of alcoholic listeners. What can I say? But they're staying in shape, though, aren't they?
I hope so.
So we can give them that. But the first question I have to ask you guys, we're going to start off with Bill, and then Mike, if you have anything to offer, please feel free to jump in. First off, Bill.
Sounds good.
Bill, can you tell us about Inside Out and to whom this DVD would be best suited for?
Well, when we sat down and we really hashed out what we were trying to do, it was a matter of sort of, to use an analogy, You do maintenance on your car to keep the performance at the highest level and to prevent breakdown. And that's essentially what the Inside Out video is all about from an upper body perspective. Mike's been involved in a lower body mobility video, and I've got one that I use for my golfers. And we got to talking that there really wasn't anything that involved the shoulder and the upper extremity. And so what we did was we basically just sat down and we started showing each other, you know, different mobility drills that we thought would be appropriate, and we sort of mixed it down into a system that we think is actually a very specific protocol that needs to be followed by anyone that needs to perform at a very high level, whether it be a strength athlete or a throwing athlete or a striking athlete like a martial artist or a golfer or a tennis player, to just simply one, to maintain function at an optimal level, and two, to raise performance to a higher level while preventing injuries at the same time.
Yeah, with my kids, the groups I'm most interested in working on this with are like, especially I was at a volleyball tournament yesterday with a lot of the girls, and their posture, their upper body posture is absolutely horrendous, just from sitting at a desk all day long and then going out and playing a sport. I mean, these girls are at serious risk of shoulder injuries. So while it's a comprehensive DVD that'll cover the entire upper extremity, you know, I think there's a lot of focus on the shoulder because there are so many pathologies that we see at the shoulder. And so all these athletes that are doing repetitive overhead motions are really going to see a lot of value from this. So I'm really excited to get in and start with those kind of players, like the softball players, the baseball players, and the volleyball athletes that I work with.
Just to continue on that, you know, something you mentioned about posture, the manual becomes essential for those people that function behind a desk most of the day. We really wanted to pump this thing up from an information standpoint, because we know that there's so many people that just go to the gym after being at the office all day, and they're coming into the gym with all these postural issues or you know, scapular mobility problems or rotator cuff weakness problems, and what they need to do is properly prepare themselves before they get under the bar, so to speak, at the gym, and so we felt that was an essential component of this as well.
Sounds good.
What do you think, Kevin?
I didn't really prepare anything. And unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to check out the DVD yet. But don't worry, I'll check it out soon, and I'll throw up a review on the fitcast.com.
You just need to give me your address, and we'll send you a copy. The FitCast official certified copy.
Is it going to have, like, a stamp or anything on it? Like a,
I don't know. You might even get an autograph if you're lucky.
Oh,
you know?
Yes. You heard it here, folks. If I don't get a signed copy of the DVD, this is going to be flipping out on the message boards. That's all I'm going to say. But anyways, we'll jump into some more individualized questions for the next two. This first one comes from Lisa, and it's directed towards Mike. How did you end up with the nickname the Ass Master?
Well, you know, I would love to think that it's because of all the articles that I've written talking about the need for better gluteal performance, whether it's as far as preventing injuries or improving performance. But I know that's not the real reason. So I'll kind of give you the background behind that, because when I first started writing articles for T-Mag, I couldn't understand why I wasn't getting a better response. You know, I'd write this article that I thought was, you know, the best thing ever, and I'd only get like 8,000 people to read it, which, you know, may sound like a lot, but if you see these T-Nation articles, they're getting 20 to 30,000 hits in the first week. So I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong, and I started going back and reading my articles. I was like, well, the information's great, but, you know, the packaging wasn't all that great. You know, it's like you put the perfect article in, like, a big brown box, and nobody wants to open it. So in all my articles, I started putting these scantily clad women pictures of basically butts in all my pictures. And so about, you know, I did this for literally about a year and a half, and I saw, you know, my rankings go up, and everybody was looking at all my articles. So I was like, hey, whatever it takes to get people to get my point across, if I got to put half-naked chicks in my articles to make people read it and use it, then I figured I would do that. So T-Mag about 2 months ago came up with the nickname the Ass Master, and I've just been running with it, you know, just trying to have a good time, and hopefully people are getting something out of my articles. So that's where the nickname came from. I didn't come up with it myself, and I'm sure my significant other probably isn't too thrilled to have that nickname for her husband, but, you know, what do you do?
That's just good marketing.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, that's why
you got to find your niche, right?
Yeah, that's why we have John Williams.
Whether it's the mobility guy, the Ass Master, as long as they remember my name, I'm okay with that.
Well, that's fair. And we will jump to Bill with another question that comes from Lisa. Are you still using a stand-up desk now that you've had it for a while? Do you like the one that you chose, or would you pick a different? Pick different features now that you've tried it out. Do you use it exclusively, or do you use a regular desk as well? I'm sorry for the long question, but I wanted to let her
I was gonna say, isn't there a limit of one question per person here? How does Lisa get so many?
They're good questions. I'm sorry.
Actually, Lisa's outstanding. She actually did the proofing on our manual, so we owe her a great debt.
Yeah, she did an excellent job.
She can ask as many questions as she wants. I am still using my stand-up desk. I use it primarily for writing. I'm still struggling with standing and reading. I tend to get a little bit more fatigued doing that. I don't know why that is, but so I tend to go back and forth quite a bit more when I'm doing more reading than writing. But I don't know if the quality of my writing's improved, but it just seems to be a lot easier that way. And the reason I've done this is mainly because I was doing so much sitting and I was having a lot of hip problems. And the thing that I've noticed the most is just the hip mobility has improved significantly. You know, being as old as I am and worn out, I tend to get a lot of aches and pains just, you know, from being static. So it has helped me tremendously in that respect. As far as the type of stand-up desk they use, my wife works in the trade show exhibit business, so I actually just stole a presentation table, and it's adjustable by height and tilt, so it works quite well for me. It's not certainly nothing fancy, and like I said, I just primarily do writing there anyway, so it works exceptionally well. I don't think you need to get too fancy with anything, and frankly, some of the stand-up desks that I've seen, I'm not really impressed with. They're just big, tall boxes. I don't think they're very functional. And basically, a little side project that I'm actually working on, we're going to actually try to come up with something a little bit more functional and mobile and things that we can actually market. So this is actually kind of mushroomed into a new project.
Are you going to have to keep it under wraps for now?
Yeah, I do, kind of. But you know, hopefully there's going to be something that comes out of it.
That sounds great. Hopefully we can hear about it on the show in the future. But that sounds really cool. I've actually been thinking about trying this out, but I just don't have the setup to do it. But now that you've talked about it, I think I can throw some things together and at
least
give
it a
shot. If
you put a box on your desk,
yeah, exactly.
You got a stand-up desk. I mean, it's that simple.
There you go. Well, we'll jump into the next question. I'm going to let Mike take the first stab at this one, but Bill, feel free to chime in. This one comes from Steve. What are your thoughts on how ankle and shoulder flexibility / mobility can affect people's ability to squat? We hear a lot about hips and lumbar position, but rarely hear anything about how mobility in other areas can make an impact.
Well, I think ankle mobility, especially when we're talking about squatting, is hugely important. You know, you watch a lot of these guys that, you know, if they squat in a flat-soled shoe, really can't squat, you know, hardly at all, and you put, you know, an inch like an Olympic-type shoe underneath them and taking that ankle mobility out of the equation, and all of a sudden they can, you know, squat well below parallel without an issue. So I think with regards to ankle mobility, it's very important, as well as just keeping the knees healthy. You know, when I talked at LA, I talked extensively about how ankle mobility can help improve the health of your knees. So I think that's important and something we need to take into consideration. But also when we're looking at shoulder mobility, you know, I don't know how much of an issue it's going to be immediately, but as far as bar placement goes, it's going to affect where you can place the bar, how comfortably you're going to be able to squat. And I think, you know, one thing that people always tend to overlook is we put this emphasis on biomechanical efficiency when we're squatting or doing movements, you know, whether it's an extra wide squat stance or whatever. But you know, all things being equal, just being comfortable with the bar on your back is really important. You know, when I stopped trying to conform my body into a certain type of squat and I just went more with what was natural and what allowed me to feel the most comfortable, my number shot up dramatically. So, you know, I think that's something that's never really kind of looked into enough. But, you know, if you're just more comfortable and you have better mobility in the right areas, you're going to have a better squat and your pounds are going to tend to go up. So,
Bill, anything to add to that?
When you talk about shoulders and such, just a couple things to keep in mind. The width of your grip from your shoulders, the wider your grip, the greater the tendency there's going to be to produce wear and tear on the anterior structures of your shoulder, because we're getting into that closer to that 90-90 position, like a high five position. Which is notorious for putting stress on the anterior capsule and your dynamic stabilization that the subscapularis provides. So if you've got any limitation in range of motion and you're kind of cranking your hands back into that position, you find that you have to work to get into that good back squat position. That's definitely something that you want to address right away, and you may need to shift your emphasis away from a back squat for a while until you resolve that issue. Mike's a great example of somebody that had a mobility issue. I think he's the perfect guy to talk to when we're talking about this, because how long ago was it, Mike?
I think we started in like February or March, something like that.
Yeah, and basically it was from the ankle on up, and he's made dramatic strides just in working on his mobility, and his numbers are going to shoot up. I can't wait till you get back into competition and see what you can do with that.
Yeah. I think another thing that we don't look enough into as far as mobility goes is side-to-side discrepancies or asymmetries, because one thing that Bill picked up on immediately when we were kind of going through all this was all the sports that I played, like basketball and volleyball, put a lot of repetitive strain and increased the stiffness around my left ankle. So side-to-side, my mobility was not symmetrical. It's fine when you're playing a sport, but if you're trying to do something that should have bilateral symmetry, like a squat or a deadlift, and you don't have it, well, that's when you end up getting into these injury type issues. So, you know, I think that's something beyond just looking at, you know, gross mobility. We need to look at side to side asymmetries and trying to make sure we're balanced, especially with the things that we do every day. So,
very good. We'll jump into the next question, which we'll give Bill the first stab at. It comes from John. How important is ankle mobility in improving vertical leap, and what effect does it have?
Actually, this is a really good question. About 80% of your force in a vertical jump, regardless of what type of jump, actually, even if it's a long jump, it's going to be produced from the muscles around the hip. But what you find is that if the ankle's restricted, we're going to lose a great deal of force that's applied from the knee, and really the only place we're going to produce a lot of force is from the hip. For instance, if you have a figure skater who's in a skate that basically freezes your ankle, you know, there's very limited ankle mobility there. What you're going to find is the way that they produce the height in their jump is so hip oriented. So ankle mobility becomes a big deal. And what you find is with guys that have a much greater vertical jump, they tend to have better ankle mobility than the people that don't have a great vertical jump. But then you can take it all the way to the extreme opposite end and have people that have too much ankle mobility, and they're going to have the same problems producing force, because what happens when you have too much ankle mobility, the foot becomes this sort of loose bag of bones. You see people with like fallen arches and things, and their foot just kind of flattens out, and they don't have a rigid lever to push off the ground with when they're trying to produce a maximum height jump. So really what we're talking about is trying to find that optimal range for each individual to produce their maximum vertical jump as far as ankle mobility is concerned.
Yeah, and to piggyback off that, you know, when I read that question, you know, I was kind of thinking along the same lines of Bill, but, you know, you also see, again, we keep talking about the need for ankle mobility, but we talk about all these athletes that have very poor ankle mobility, and so not only do we know that it's going to affect their jumping performance, but as far as their landing and just that general kind of, you know, performance issue, we're always looking for things that are going to affect their long-term performance. So, you know, if they don't have that necessary dorsiflexion, range of motion when they land, and that ability to absorb force, they're going to be at, you know, long-term risk for kind of knee injuries or just soft tissue injuries around the lower extremity. So, you know, that's kind of the way I was approaching it, as more of an injury prevention aspect. But you know, Bill makes a great point, and all the people that you see that are really, you know, big jumpers have great development around their hips and their thighs. So, you know, nothing can do better than just getting stronger in a lot of cases.
Yeah, in fact, there's a study that shows that. They looked at a bunch of different jumpers, and what they found was that there was no consistent technique, but what they found was that the guys with the best jumpers had the greatest hip and knee muscle strength. So it goes a long way.
Yep.
In sort of an semi-related topic, I'd just like to ask you guys about your opinion on the Nike Free shoes. I've seen some news about it in the last couple of days on the internet, and I saw that Mike was wearing them in Connecticut at Ryan Lee's boot camp, and I just wanted to ask you guys, who would you recommend those for, or would you recommend them in general? And we'll start off with Mike and go to Bill.
You know, it depends on the person. I'd have to evaluate their feet and kind of their walking gait, how they move, things of that nature. But, you know, for me, I really like them, especially when I'm training. I feel like I get a better relationship with the ground. I've got a better idea of what's going on. especially when I do single leg movements. I really like them for that aspect. For squatting and deadlifting, you know, I can't totally get away from my powerlifting ways, so I do have, you know, shoes that I'm more comfortable with performing those movements in. But, you know, for me, and you should know too, I have orthotics that I use to kind of help control my pronation, especially on my right foot. But for me, they seem to work out really well. I like the feel of them. They're very light. So, you know, it would depend on the person, and that's always the best answer is it depends. But, you know, it's true. So I would have to evaluate the person, see what kind of foot, you know, dynamics they have, and I'd kind of go from there.
Bill, do you have any feelings?
I have feelings. I have never worn them, but I've seen Mike Boyle wear them, and I know Mike Boyle's a really smart guy. So, you know, I think there's probably a good reason to wear them. I'll let you know next time I buy some shoes.
It sounds good. I think I'm on the same side as you with that, Bill. I'm waiting for the next set of shoes since I spent $100 on Nike Shocks, and I just found out that I shouldn't be wearing them.
So. Yeah, he's got the tightest calves I think I've ever seen. I could tell within 10 seconds of watching him walk. So,
you know that's affecting your vertical jump, Kevin.
I know, and this sucks because I'm a basketball player, and this is what I do all winter, and now I'm a couple weeks away from it's intramurals, but you have to keep in mind, there's like 50 teams on this intramural league at college, and it's pretty intense. And this is very disappointing, but I've been on the foam roller just trying to get those things back to form. And
I tell you what, Kevin, earlier today I shot some video on some ankle mobility and some soft tissue stuff that you can do yourself, and I'll send that to you, and you can post it for your FitCast subscribers.
That'd be awesome, because this, like, I was depressed for like 2 hours after Mike told me that, and I wanted to go up to him. So, did you see this in LA 2 weeks ago and never tell me?
But, no, I didn't. No. I didn't get enough chance to watch you walk around in LA, but Ryan Lee, I noticed it within about 15 seconds. So
damn,
it was pretty noticeable.
Well, I guess that's something I will put on my calendar to work on. But we'll just get back to the questions because all the listeners are getting pissed off for getting off track. But the next question comes from Jeff, and we'll start off with Bill this time. Would it be possible to provide a typical progression from getting to a comfortable front squat, or any squat for that matter? Are there specific exercises that should be mastered first? My upper body is comfortable, including the wrists, but I can't get much lower than parallel. And actually, we're going to start off with Mike because I just remembered Bill started the first question. And I want
actually, Mike's probably more appropriate for this one because he's actually made a switch over to some front squats recently.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, with this stuff, you know, I did do a lot of Gray Cook's kind of deep squat progression type stuff. Bill and I were going over that. But, you know, I've worked on a lot of different things. If you reviewed, like, Thomas Meyer's work from Anatomy Trains, like the superficial back line, trying to get everything, just my entire posterior chain basically to loosen up a little bit, I've worked on that. I've worked to loosen up my piriformis muscles. I've improved my ankle mobility. You know, so it's really hard to tell what's going on with somebody until you evaluate them. And generally, you can tell a lot just by their posture, what kind of areas are tight and what, if you loosen it up, is going to shake free and it's going to improve their mobility. But, you know, a lot of people honestly can just put on a heeled shoe and Olympic squat to a pretty reasonable depth. So, you know, I'd kind of start there. If you don't have an Olympic soled shoe, try, you know, just putting some 25-pound plates underneath your feet. Start with like a hip width. Stance, toe out just slightly, and see where you can get with that. You know, it took me about 3 months, but I honestly had never been able to front squat to a reasonable depth before, and now I can go pretty much buttocks to calves with no issues, and it feels really good. So I'm going to start using that more because not only do I get a nice mobility transfer from that, but I also train my anterior stabilizers. So, you know, with all that, it's a really great exercise. I don't think I'm ready to give up back squats just yet. Again, the power lifter in me kind of, you know, has this inner revolt every now and then. But, you know, I've really made a huge transition. I've got to thank Bill because he took a lot of time to help me kind of see where I was going wrong. And, you know, as a coach, it's hard to evaluate yourself. So it's great to have somebody of his knowledge level to come in and look at you and tell you what you need to work on. So that's where I'm at right now. Bill?
Without getting too complex, I think a lot of times just using the exercise you're trying to improve as a corrective exercise is a viable option. Most people don't consider putting themselves into to the bottom of a front squat and just sitting there and doing an isometric hold and allowing your active flexibility to improve. A lot of times what you're dealing with is a stiffness issue where there may not be sufficient load or sufficient time for that tissue to elongate. So even just putting yourself into a front squat or widening your stance or externally rotating your feet so you're using a little bit more toe out to see if you can get a little bit more depth that way and then progressively realign yourself over time rather than, giving yourself, 500 different exercises that you may not be able to perform adequately without, supervision. Just simply use the front squat.
Sounds good. We'll jump into the next question, which I'm hoping for some interesting comments. I'm sure I could give a couple. But this comes from Red. If you could stop people in the gym from doing one thing, what would it be? And also, what one thing would you have them start? And I think we should keep this training-wise and not just making fun of what people do in the gym. Or if you want to go that direction, feel free.
I haven't been in a commercial gym in over 6 years, so I really don't know. I can only go by memory. I think people do way too many exercises. I think they spend way too much time working on smaller muscle groups when they could just simply be working on more effective exercises. The big ones, the presses, the pulls, the squats, the lunges. If you got to fight for mirror space, there's a pretty good indication that people are working on the smaller muscles way too much. I don't really see a point in it anymore. When you look at my own programming, I think maybe six primary exercises in a workout is probably about the most I've written in quite some time. I'll do some ancillary stuff, but it doesn't take much time at all. But when you talk about primary movements, if you can go into the gym and hit three or four really hard, I think you're going to see a lot more progress than if you went in there and tried to do like a 12 exercise program. Because by the time you get to the end, you just don't have any juice left, and you're probably working below the threshold level where you would see some sort of progress. What should they do more of? I think it's pretty clear, mobility stuff, just making sure that you move effectively and efficiently and optimally. When you talk about the influence of your upper back posture relative to how the shoulder functions, you can't do enough of that stuff because you're constantly battling it outside the gym. You come in with all these postural issues from 23 hours outside the gym, and you to try to correct it in 1 hour is really hard to do, so the mobility stuff becomes very important.
As far as things that, I'd love to see people stop doing, really, I still train in a commercial gym. I won't be here, hopefully, for too much longer. I've been putting away all my nickels and dimes trying to save up so I can start my home gym here, and I think it's going to become a reality here soon, but as far as a commercial gym goes, the thing that I would love to see people stop doing is body part splits. We make fun of it all the time, and we think that hopefully there's a more educated culture out there, but unfortunately there's still a ton of people. I would guess like 80% of the people that go to commercial gyms are still doing body part splits. I see the guys that are in there and they do every imaginable chest exercise over the course of an hour and a half. And you just wonder, you did all that. Are you going to do that same workout for your upper back here in 2 or 3 days? And the chances are they're probably not. Or the same thing with their legs. Are they going to train their legs that hard in 3 or 4 days? And, it just never happens. So not only do they need mobility from, a training perspective just in general, but to counteract all the stuff that they're doing with poor training. Their programming just really isn't all that good. So, mobility, beyond the behavior modification aspect of it, to just to kind of counteract a lot of what they're doing in the gym that is, aiding to even worse posture. And when Mike Boyle did his presentation at Ryan Lee's seminar, he said the three things that guys do not need any more of when they go to a gym are bench presses, curls, and, biking, because they're in those kind of positions all the time. So why are we reinforcing that with what we do in the weight room? So when you think about it in that regard, it's really true. We need to kind of use our gym time to counteract what we're doing the other 23 hours of the day. And as far as things we need to do more of, obviously Bill touched on it, mobility stuff. You know, and I don't say that just because I have two mobility products out now, and beyond the Ass Master, I'm also known as the mobility guy. But, you know, I mean, I'm okay with that too, you know, it's whatever, but, you know, people need more mobility, and I see so many people now, I mean, even 18-year-old kids, I've got a 16-year-old kid that I won't even let squat with a barbell on his back, because he's so tight, even when he tries to squat with just the barbell on his back, I mean, he's nowhere near parallel, and his back's rounding, he's so tight and so immobile, you know, he's putting himself at risk of injury, and if I let him do that, then I'm not doing my job as a coach. So even if we can just improve mobility with our clients and with our athletes, we're going to see a huge payback and huge dividends. So that's something that I would always include in their workouts.
Amen.
Is that something that you find that people are very tight and they don't even have any sense of it? Like for me, example, I had no sense that my calves were tight. Are you finding that in your clients as well, that they're just oblivious to it?
Most definitely. I think just as a culture, we're not very in tune with our bodies. You know, we do have some people that are the total right side of the spectrum where any little ache or pain they notice, but a lot of my clients don't even know they have an issue until I start pointing it out to them. You know, for instance, I just started with a new client the other day, and he's had a history of low back herniations, neck herniations. It took me off about 20 seconds looking at his posture to realize how tight he was. And so I started giving him some specific stretching exercises for his hamstrings. He was in posterior tilt. So I started working on his hamstrings, started working on some psoas activation stuff. And he was amazed. He's like, wow, I didn't even realize all this was a problem. So that's the thing. They don't realize. They just know that they have an issue, whether it's back pain or neck pain or something like that. They don't realize that the true issues lie elsewhere in their body. And that's kind of our job as performance coaches or physical therapists to help show them what they need to do and give them the tools necessary to fix their body up and feel better.
Yeah, a lot of this just comes from being sedentary. You know, we've shifted so far, you know, towards immobility that a lot of people don't recognize that they lack mobility because they're not challenged. And when somebody comes to us and they're there for exercise-related programming and we're going to challenge them to be in postures and perform movements that they just haven't performed in such a long time, that then it becomes apparent to them that they lack mobility.
And also just one more question, jumping into that last discussion. Why do you guys think that people are still stuck on these doing 8 or even 12 exercises with the splits? I mean, it seems like these days that there's so much information out there. I know it's not as much in the big muscle mags, but it seems like magazines like Men's Health and Men's Fitness are starting to go in the right direction. And with like resources like T-Nation now, and with guys out there like Craig Ballantyne and Alan just having good programs, why do you think everyone's still stuck on doing crappy programs?
I just think a lot of this bad information just gets perpetuated. You know, it gets passed on. You know, we're still battling the some of the silliest things about. You know, granted, Alan showed his spot reduction study that just came out, but we're still battling with that. People are trying to perform exercises directly over a muscle group to make their waist small or whatever. We're still battling things like that. Bad information gets perpetuated. And not everybody picks up Men's Health, and not everybody picks up Men's Fitness, and not everybody else reads T-Nation. You know, granted, they get millions of hits, and they have millions of readers, but when you've got 200 and...
Or listens to the FitCast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I meant to say that. You've got...
Hey, if everyone else is doing it.
That's right.
Yeah, we've got almost 300 million people, you know, in the United States alone. You know, how many of those people are actually informed?
Yeah.
Very few.
Well, and you think about it, too, a lot. I mean, when I started off, I followed a body part split because I didn't know any better, you know. You go to the grocery store, and this is obviously before the internet was really big, but, you know, what's sitting right there? Muscle and Fitness or Flex, you know. You see these huge guys, and most kids in high school, you know, they want to get bigger. I mean, that's honestly, that's their main goal. They don't necessarily want to look like that guy on the cover, but, you know, he's closer to where they want to be than they are at that point in time. So, I mean, that you say, well, Ronnie Coleman does 10 sets of biceps. You know, that's what I need to do. So, you know, that's the thing. It's kind of what you learn in the beginning, and it's a lot harder to kind of reprogram yourself. If you're smart and you're well-educated and you seek out, you know, the better resources, then you're going to find it. But unfortunately, a lot of it's just what you see in popular media as far as a muscle and fitness or a flex still just isn't up to snuff and still not giving you what you need to hear. So, unfortunately, bad information is still out there to be had. So,
very disappointing, but we'll just keep moving on. And the next question comes from George, and I think we'll start with Bill this time. What changes can the average office worker make to his working environment to improve his posture and reduce negative impact to mobility?
He needs to buy the Inside Out warm-up manual, because there's an entire section in there on that exact topic.
Oh, cool.
Just to give you an idea of some things you can do, there, ideal computer setups. My physical therapy company actually has a person that goes out and basically sets up work sites, so they're ergonomically more correct. Just the postural strains associated with sitting in front of a computer and gravity works. It pulls people downward all day long, and so we see those adaptations. So one, just the fact that you're aware of your posture on a regular basis. I'll have people set an egg timer next to their computer that goes off every 15 minutes as a reminder to make a postural correction. So, you know, in an 8-hour workday, there's 32 corrections that they make. So at least they're breaking this horrible pattern of kyphotic postures and rounded shoulders. Setting your joints, and if you're going to sit, you want to think 90-degree angles at the knee, at the hip, and at the elbow. For your keyboard setup, the top of your monitor should be at eye level. Switch to a stand-up desk. You know, I've really promoted this heavily. In fact, my good friend at Men's Health Fitness Center, Adam Campbell, is using primarily a stand-up desk, even though it looks like he's standing at a urinal from the doorway of his office. He gets that a lot.
Well, that would be great, too, if you had a urinal in front of your computer. You wouldn't have to ever leave
exactly.
Your office.
Well, you know, when we're talking about designing stand-up desks and we want to make it more functional, I think that's definitely going to be a component. All we need is like a hose and a funnel.
It's all about the extras, man. Add-ons.
There you go. So, honestly, the biggest thing is just breaking the patterns on a regular basis so you're not getting stuck in one position. And, you know, we made a big deal in the manual about fidgeting. You know, constantly changing position. Little kids do it, and then we program them not to. And so we find out as adults we just get stuck in one posture for way too long. And simply doing regular – we even threw in some mobility exercises that you can do at your desk to try to overcome some of this stuff. But just break the patterns.
Yeah, I don't know really how much I can add to that, because Bill covered it really well. One tip that I picked up in L.A. from Jesse Burdick, he's a ART practitioner, massage therapist out there. I'm not really sure how to do it, but he told me that he actually takes his clients and the ones that use Outlook and sets up a reminder. So every 15 minutes, it dings at them and tells them, you know, to fix their posture or whatever. So I thought that was a great idea. You know, whatever you can do to kind of reinforce better posture while you're working, you know, getting up, moving around, fidgeting, whatever it takes. But, you know, I mean, I don't know about Bill, but I find myself sometimes still, you know, it's like I got to remember getting the right postures, even with the kneeling. You know, I'll even kneel in front of my workstation for, you know, periods of time so I can work on, you know, just lengthening my hip flexors a little bit and getting into a better position. So,
yeah, it's a perfect use for one of those AirX pads, since they're kind of useless when it comes to performance training. You know, you can use them for kneeling, which works out great, because especially the rectus femoris, the muscle down the front of your thigh that attaches to your pelvis, and can certainly contribute to your anterior pelvic tilt. It's a great way to keep that loose and stretched out.
Sounds good. We'll jump into the next question from Jason, and we'll go to Mike first this time. I've heard different theories about when to do mobility and prehab work, particularly for the rotator cuff. Some say do it before you train when the muscles are fresh and to loosen up the area. Others say to do it afterward so you don't tire out those small stabilizers before moving heavy weight. Is there a preferred timing of prehab work?
What if I told him it depends?
Oh, crap.
No, I won't.
I love
that
answer.
I won't tell him that because that's the great cop-out, but it is true. It depends. The big thing we need to differentiate here, and I think we talked a little bit about it throughout the manual and the DVD, was the difference between true, like, more activation work and true strengthening work. If we're looking to activate, you know, again, in the Inside Out DVD, we show exercises that activate the rotator cuff and get those muscles to work. So we need to know the difference between an activation exercise where we're just doing a few reps to improve recruitment and activation versus a true strengthening type program. For most people, you know, you want to activate at the beginning, then you can do your big exercises, and then you can do some true strengthening work at the end. For some people that are more looking for a recovery type program or a rehab program, you know, Ian King, I mean, I think he goes a little bit overboard as far as, you know, starting off with the rotator cuff stuff at the beginning, but there may be some merit to that for some people. If they've had some kind of pathology or injury, they might need that or that muscle group or that exercise may be the weak link. So they may need to start with that, and obviously if you're going to start with a rotator cuff strengthening program, you're going to limit your performance on the other exercises because you don't want to perform those in a huge state of fatigue. So, again, it kind of depends, but the differentiation needs to be made between doing something for an activation or to improve your actual training or using it as a strengthening type exercise. So that's where the biggest issue needs to be resolved, I think.
I have nothing to add to that. That was beautiful, Mike.
Well, thank you. I thought for sure you'd have something to say.
Just, again, I think just to reiterate, it's a matter of priority. You know, and you have to look at things from a program standpoint versus a workout standpoint. You know, there may be a time and a place where you'll prioritize maybe some smaller muscle groups. For instance, if you've got an isolated weakness in the scapular muscles or the rotator cuff, it may be something that you want to prioritize and do first. But and you hit on this as well, is that you're going to notice that some of your big exercises are going to be effective. And you may not even need to do those right away. It may be a matter of just focusing on some of the smaller muscle groups for a while.
Well, and Bill, I think you commented on this somewhere. I don't remember where I read it. But you mentioned how, like, when we work on our thoracic spine extension or extension rotation and we improve our alignment in our thoracic spine, how a lot of times those muscles just have a tendency to wake up and kind of turn back on. So
well,
I was just going to say, you know, I thought that was really important because most people think, well, to activate something, we have to focus or direct energy towards it. And it's like, well, if you just improve your alignment, a lot of times kind of chips fall into place and you start to fire a lot better than you did.
Right. I mean, you look at link tension relationships and things like that. If the scapula is in a really bad position, the rotator cuff muscles will test weak. As much as 23%, I believe, if memory serves. So just by repositioning the scapula, we don't have to do anything to the rotator cuff, and the rotator cuff will immediately test strong again. So, and again, just kind of, I'm going to sound like a salesman. That's why the Inside Out is set up the way it is because there's something that has to happen before we try to strengthen the rotator cuff, before we try to strengthen the muscles around the scapula. Because if we just focus on the rotator cuff, yes, we may increase the strength, but it's not going to be anywhere near what we could do had we worked on the proximal issues, the ones on the middle of the body, like the thoracic spine, that allows the scapula to be positioned appropriately so we can stabilize it in the right place, and then we don't necessarily have to worry about the rotator cuff because it's all taken care of by working from the inside out.
Wow, that's perfect. Answer. And you ended by saying inside out. So
Alan would be so proud of you right now.
Yes, but it's not a warm-up, boys. It's a performance program. Yeah,
that's right.
Well,
we're not marketing experts just yet.
Yeah. We'll end up with another question from Red, and he asks, this is kind of a lengthy question, but it will be interesting nonetheless. How is your work time split up between individual training, business administrative stuff, which is very specific, studying, seminars, and other events? And this time we'll start off with Mike and we'll end with Bill.
Wow. So basically he wants to know how I live my life, huh?
Yeah.
Top to bottom.
When do you go grocery shopping?
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously balance is important because I basically have two different roles. I have my role within custom fitness and custom athletics as a personal trainer and strength coach here in Indiana. And then I also have, you know, Robertson Training Systems, where I deal with all my online consulting, my seminars, I develop my products, and, you know, do all my writing. So if I had to give you a breakdown of a normal day, you know, training clients is generally going to be about 6 hours out of the day. General working within the business, whether that's writing, administrative stuff, just within my business and trying to grow my business, we're probably looking at another 3 hours a day. Studying, I always try and get at least an hour in. One thing I want to comment on here is it's not just reading or watching videos. You know, I think there is. I think it's great that there's a push towards people learning more and trying to develop more theories and products and all this stuff. But I think at some point we need to take a step back and stop reading all this stuff and figure out what we've just learned, how it fits into our conception or our philosophy of things. Because after a while, you just keep reading stuff, and it's just this collection of everybody else's thoughts. And, you know, once you get in there and you start to figure out, okay, this is what I read, this is how I feel about it, this is how it fits into my kind of program or my philosophy, once we kind of do that, we kind of have a better concept of how we are, how we want to coach people. And I think too often we get caught up in just learning all these arbitrary things, and we just need to figure out how it fits into our program and how it fits into what we want to do. So, you know, if I had to give you a basic breakdown, that's kind of how it does, how it goes. I should note, too, that whenever a product comes out, the administrative time increases exponentially. So like right now, with Inside Out being released, I don't have as much time to develop other products or to work on articles, just because there's a lot of administrative stuff that goes on, tracking the orders, making sure the order fulfillment is working the way that it should, making sure that people that order e-books are able to download it, and just general customer service type questions. So I'm not grand enough to have like a personal assistant or anything. So I do have to take the time myself to take care of that. So I guess that's kind of a long-winded answer, but hopefully that gives you an idea of what a typical day looks like for me. So.
And you've been all over the place lately, being in LA and Connecticut and Chicago. Are you in Chicago?
I was in Chicago in May for the G-Flux seminar. Yeah, I've been all over. In the last 4 months, in May, I was at the G-Flux seminar with John Berardi and Charles Poliquin. I did the Building the Efficient Athlete seminar in New York with Eric Cressy. Came back, did the LA seminar 2 months later, and then I attended the Ryan Lee seminar like 2 weeks after that. So I've been all over the place lately. So I'm going to enjoy the next 2.5-3 months and kind of get back to baseline and work on training and, you know, all the good stuff that you miss out on when you're traveling a lot. So. But you got to keep up. You know, you young pups are trying to outlearn me, so got to keep on my toes and keep learning this new stuff. So,
am I up?
You're up.
Yeah, it's you.
Okay. I function on what I have affectionately called conjugated prioritization, and that is a trademarked concept, by the way, so don't try to steal it from me. And what it does, it functions, it doesn't reject the concurrent system of prioritization where you work equally on everything, but what I do and what I find is that I have to focus a lot on one thing and then try to maintain everything else. So like when we were working on the DVD, that took a lot of time, but again, I got to see my clients, I got to manage my PT clinics, and I got to write, and I got to do all that stuff. So if you look at my typical day, I manage 2 physical therapy clinics, which is about a 10-hour day, 4 days a week, and then I'll see my own clients in the evening after that. And then after that, I'll do any administrative stuff that I need to do, like mailing out orders or answering emails or article writing, product development, things along those lines. So I'm usually going pretty good from about 5 in the morning till about 11:30 at night. I do have 1 day a week where it's all my training business, which is kind of nice. I take half a day off on Saturday, and I sleep in on Sunday to try to catch up a little bit. But basically, it's kind of go, go, go. When you're trying to be popular, you know, you kind of have to keep your name out there, and you have to keep working at it, especially locally, which is the primary business. To try to keep the influx of new clientele coming in and trying to maintain your current clientele. So it turns into a busy day. But I think by shifting priorities like I do, I'm able to get a lot more done on one thing and then try to maintain the rest and just shift that around. And that includes my wife, my lovely wife, who's the most understanding person in the entire world, who allows me to do this. And she gives up some of her time with me to let me do this. So I make sure that she gets paybacks as well.
And now I look like a total jerk for not mentioning my wife. Thank you.
Accepting the award for best actor and forgets to mention his wife.
I mentioned her earlier.
Yes, you did.
I just want to thank you guys so much for coming on the show, taking your time, and just kind of holding, just tolerating me as we kind of messed up the time this morning. That was my bad.
No problem.
My school. So thanks for coming on later tonight. And thank you all out there for providing questions, downloading the show. I have to mention our sponsor, Craig Ballantyne and TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. So got to throw that out there. Huge thank you to Craig for providing support for the show. Also, just want to mention, don't forget to download the show on iTunes. Check out the newsletter at TheFitCast.com. All the links that were mentioned on the show, especially the Inside Out website that was really hard to write down. If you weren't writing it down, it will be up on TheFitCast.com as well. And I guess I'll pretty much wrap it up for this week's show. I'm Kevin Larrabee.
I'm Mike Robertson.
Oh, I knew that was going to happen. See, I didn't tell you who to go first. So,
I was going alphabetically.
Ah, yes. I thought it was age before beauty. Well, that still works, right?
I still win.
That's right. I'm Mike Robertson.
Let's try it one more time. One more time.
Okay.
Kevin, go first.
I'm Kevin Larrabee.
I'm Bill Hartman.
And I'm Mike Robertson.
And, it's Sunday night, so there's some football on, so we should probably go.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks everyone for checking out this week's episode of the FitCast episode number 23. We'll see you next time. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of
Sounds Good, man.
See, Mike's a little laggy, but that's all right. Mike, you're coming in a little laggy on Bill and I. It sounds, but
that's not good, man.
Don't worry. No, you don't worry about it. You'll just sound like you're slow in responding to our questions.
That's good. So I sound like a total retard on TikTok.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I can already tell.